Morning. Today's daf Mabavasus Kuf Chav Gimel. We are on the very bottom of Kuf Chav Beis Amud Beis. We start the day with a brisa Tanur Rabbanan. The brisa on the very bottom of the Amud is going to be discussing Pishnaim of the Bechor. Today, we're going to be discussing extensively Pishnaim. I take it back a little bit. Most of today is going to be Agadita. Okay. But in terms of the halachic discussion of today's daf, it's going to be a discussion of Pishnaim of the Bechor. Now, we knew that was coming because we saw the Mishnah yesterday. Mishnah on yesterday's daf on the Amud Beis transitions from discussing Nachal in general to the Pishnaim of the Bechor. What we learned back in the Mishnah was just one singular halacha, which is that the Pishnaim that is entitled to the Bechor comes from the father's estate, not from the mother's estate. Although the son, and if there's no son or daughter, is going to be inheriting both from the father and from the mother, and both of the estates are going to drop down to the children, but the Pishnaim only comes from the father's estate, not from the mother's estate. That's what the Mishnah taught us yesterday. The Gemara now starts off with a very simple question. The question where we know the answer to it, but the Gemara nevertheless is going to entertain it, and that is a discussion of how to calculate Pishnaim. What is two times? Two times what? So there really are two options. I'm sure there could be more than two options, but in terms of what the Gemara is going to entertain, it's really two options. One option the Gemara is going to entertain is that let's assign an amount that everyone's going to receive. Let's call that X. Okay, I'll bring you back to your days of algebra. So let's call that X, and then what the brother's going to receive, the oldest brother's going to receive, is going to receive 2X. So whatever everyone else is going to get, he's going to get two times that amount. That's one way to understand Pishnaim. Another way to understand Pishnaim, however, as the Gemara is going to entertain, but not conclude, is that Pishnaim can mean of the entire estate, meaning the entire estate now has a value, and Pishnaim means he's going to get two times the remaining portion of the estate. So in other words, if the estate is, let's say, $1,000, okay. I know, small numbers. But let's say the estate is $1,000. So he, the Bechor, is going to get $666.66. And whatever other brothers are out there, meaning it could be one, it could be 10, it could be 20, and they're going to be splitting the last third. And that's what Pishnaim could mean. Pishnaim could mean the twice as much of all the other brothers. Okay, so that's the other suggestion. Okay, so to that which the Gemara says, which one is correct? So again, we know which one's correct, but the Gemara is going to entertain it, and that's where we start off today. It's a brisa, Tana Rabbanan. Gemara starts off, Lase Slo Pishnaim. So the Bechor is entitled to Pishnaim twice as much. Pishnaim Ke'echad. So Pishnaim Ke'echad. That brisa says that it's going to be two times like all the other brothers, meaning, the first way I presented it, meaning that it's going to be all the other brothers are receiving X, and he's going to be receiving 2X. But in other words, twice as much as any of the other brothers. The Gemara says, well, maybe no. Maybe the way to view his Pishnaim is that Pishnaim is commensurate to the entire estate. Meaning, take the entire estate, pull the entire estate together, he'll get two-thirds, and the rest of the brothers will get a third. Maybe that's what Pishnaim meant. So if it didn't, when the Gemara says, and, let's argue this logically. How are we going to argue it logically? Chalko im echad v'chalko im chamisha, or chilko, I should say. It's better grammar, better pronunciation. So chilko im echad, chilko im chamisha. Well, look. In other words, when it comes to an oldest brother, he could be an older brother to just one other brother, or he could be an older brother to five other brothers. Meaning, you're the oldest of whatever your family size is. Ma chilko im echad pishnaim keechad, av chilko im chamisha pishnaim keechad. So the Gemara makes an argument, and as we're going to see in just a moment, it's not a convincing argument, but the Gemara makes an argument, well, if he's dividing the estate with one other brother, so the other brother is X, and he's going to be 2X. Well, if he's dividing it with five other brothers, so can we make the same argument that he should be getting two of what all the other brothers are getting? I didn't mean to say the word all. Shouldn't he be receiving two of what each of the brothers are getting? That's the argument the Gemara is making. It's the Gemara says, O'klach l'derech zu. And again, as you already can figure out, it's not a convincing argument. In fact, the argument can go in the exact opposite direction. Gemara says, look, in this very same argument, you can go the other way. If he's dividing the estate with one other brother, what does that mean? It means that he's receiving two-thirds of the entire estate. So you can make the argument that when he's dividing the estate with five other brothers, he should get two-thirds 1/3 of the entire estate. And the other five brothers are going to be sitting there and dividing 1/3 of the estate. So again, right now we don't have any kind of compelling argument that one can make in terms of how to assess, how to calculate his pishnayim. So tamalomer v'ayabiyam anchilos banav. So the Gemara says, fine. So as far as a logical argument is concerned, so the Gemara says, we're going to have to scrap it. What are we going to do? We're going to look at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, on the day in which he bequeaths to his son, HaTorah rips a nachla etzel achin. So the Gemara says, right. So the Gemara says, what is the Torah suggesting? B'yom hanchilo es banav. On the day that he bequeathed his sons. It sounds like from the Torah that who's getting the majority of the estate? So again, let's assume not two. Let's assume that there are more than two sons. The ones who are getting the majority of the estate are going to be the other sons. Meaning, yes, the Bechor is going to get two times, but if he were to get two times of the entire estate, it will never be that the other sons are getting the majority. In fact, it will always be that the Bechor gets the majority. By virtue of the fact that the way the Torah frames it is that the sons are getting the estate, meaning we're assuming the bulk of the estate. So most of the time, when there is more than two brothers to divide the estate, so you're going to have the brothers themselves obtaining the majority of the estate. So the Gemara says, based on the way I just explained the Pasuk, so now in terms of the two formulations of how it should be that the Bechor gets Pishnaim, it goes like the first, not like the second. Meaning it's 2x, not 2 of the total. V'omer. Now what the Gemara is going to do, this is still seemingly a continuation of the Braisa, and what the Braisa now is going to do is it's going to quote a number of other Pesukim that make exactly this point. That the Pishnaim formula for how the Bechor is going to be getting 2 times more than everyone else, it's going to be 2x, it's not going to be 2 of the total. 2/3 of the total. The Gemara says, V'omer, let's take a look now. Pesukim in Divrei Hayamim. B'nei Reuven Bechor Yisrael, Kua Bechor. So the Pesuk in Divrei Hayamim says, who's the oldest of Yaakov? So that's Reuven. However, Uvechilalo Yitzuei Aviv, but then he profaned using the beds of his father, obviously making a reference to the incident of Reuven and his stepmother. Nitna Bechor Yisrael of Nei Yosef, Ben Yisrael. V'lo Li'isiachis Bechorah. And so therefore the Bechor was moved over from Reuven over to Yosef. Okay, why lateral move? Meaning, why not just simply drop down? Why not go down to Shimon? Why not go down to Yehuda? Stay tuned as we're going to be addressing that question momentarily. V'omer, and the Gemara says, and I'll quote another pasuk from you, also from Divrei Hayamim. Pasuk says, Ki Yehuda gavar bechav l'nagid mimenu v'abachor l'Yosef. V'abachor liYosef. Yehuda was Gavar Ba'achav. He was the strongest of the brothers, stronger of the brothers, and he was also Nagid. He was a leader, and the Bechor went to Yosef. Nemra Bechor liYosef, and Nemra Bechor liDoros. Now it says Bechor as it relates to Yosef, and now we also know that it says Bechor as it relates to future generations. Ma Bechor Amor liYosef Pishnayim Ke'echad. Now Yosef got the Bechor double portion. Now we also know, in terms of a formula, how much he received. Meaning Eretz Yisrael was divided into 12 sections. Again, Levi's to be taken out. So 12 sections, how to get to 12? Because Yosef, who was given the Bechor, was given 2 times more. 2 times more than each of the brothers. Not 2 times more than the entirety of the estate. That's clear. In other words, that's Menashe and that's Ephraim, who are like the other brothers. Pishtaim Keachad. Av Bechorah Amorad Ladaros Pishtaim Keachad. So once, basically, Yosef now has taught us how exactly the formula of Pishtaim works. So now, using the Gzeirish of Bechor Bechorah, so now we know that that's how it's going to translate for all future generations. V'omer. And the Bryce
said, maybe that Yosef was real.
We'll get there. V'omer, and the Gemara says, and I'll give you another pasuk as well. If all this doesn't convince you, V'omer, v'ani nasad lecha shchem echad alchacha. This is Yaakov speaking. Going to give shchem echad. Shchem in this context means a chelek. I'm going to give an additional chelek more than the brothers. Asher lakachti mi'adam Mary b'charbi v'kashti, that I took from the hands of the Amorites using my sword, using my bow and arrow. Now, v'chi b'charvo v'kashto lakach v'alo kvar nemar ki lo b'kashti yaftach v'charbi lo sosheni. So the Gemara says, now what is he talking about? The sword, bow, arrow, like what's going on over here? In fact, the Pasuk in Tehillim says there was no sword, there was no bow and arrow. So, ela charbi zu tefila v'kashti zu bakasha. So they are references to tefila, meaning through the tefilas of Yaakov Avinu. So he was able, excuse me, he was able to give he was able to give Shechem Echad one additional portion over to Yosef. Okay. By the way, look in the Pesukim that the Gemara just quoted in Bereishis, right? And you look at Targum Unklus over there, and I'll do it right now. Where am I? I'm in Memches. Oh, here we go. Okay, Perek Memches. V'ani nisat el chashchem echel achecha asher lakacht mi adamari b'charbi v'kashti. Targum Unklus on the Pasuk. So he writes, V'ani yavte lecha chulak chad yasir al achecha. I'm going to give you another portion of your brothers. Danisi v'miyad de damarai b'tzlusi uvavavusi. Targum Unklus actually translates the Pasuk the way the Gemara just taught us. Meaning through tzlusi uvavusi. That's davening. That's tefillah. Okay. He was clear to say he got it from the Gemara. Okay, anyway, all right. That's the Braisa. So again, for the Braisa from beginning to end, basically tells us that as far as how to construct the Pishnaim of the Bechor. So there are two possible ways to look at it, but the Gemara, the Braisa concludes. But really, there's one correct way, which is that the Pishnaim is that he's going to get two times what each of the brothers are going to get. Not Pishnaim, it's not going to be two times the entire estate, meaning that he gets two portions of the estate, the other brothers get the other portion of the third portion of the estate. That's another possibility, but the Gemara says no. And how do we know no? So the Gemara quotes a number of psukim that arrive at that conclusion. Now, you've been in the daf long enough, you know that when you see the Braisa quoting pasuk after pasuk after pasuk, so that means that there's something wrong with the first pasuk, and there's something wrong with the pasuk before that. And in other words, the compounding of psukim one after the other is there because we need it. In other words, it's not the first pasuk by itself, or nor the second or the third is going to be sufficient. And so the Gemara now goes into its classic discussion of what was wrong. Maiva Omer. We are in Kuchav Beis Amud Aleph. We are about a quarter of the way down. Maiva Omer. V'chite mahalichad Rav Yochanan ben Broka Udasa. So the Gemara says there's a halacha of Rav Yochanan ben Broka. Now this is already the second time we reference the halacha of Rav Yochanan ben Broka, but we haven't seen it yet inside. It's coming up shortly in the eighth parak of our Masechta, meaning an Arperik. But Rav Yochanan ben Broka is going to have a halacha which is debated, it's disputed, in terms of whether or not a parent before he dies, a father before he dies, can he redivide the estate amongst his sons? Instead of giving everyone equitable portion, can he have one of his sons receiving more than the other? So he's going to be of the opinion that yes, he can. You can reallocate the estate based on the will of the father. Okay, we're going to come to that later. Anyway, where does he get it from? He gets it from this pasuk. So now, if you get it from this pasuk, so now this pasuk is dedicated to teach a halacha of Rav Yochanan ben Broka. And if that's true, then it can't speak to the idea of what Pishnaim is. So Tashma v'nei Reuven b'chor Yisrael. So that's why we jump to the pasukim Divrei Hayamim. So the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim seems to give a strong indication of what the Pishnaim of b'chor is. V'chitem b'chor mi b'chor v'solo gamrinan. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim is slightly imprecise. At least the first pasuk that we quoted from Divrei Hayamim, where it says the words Bechorah so, and we're looking for Bechorah. Now, making a Gzeir Shava, in general, you need a Masara, so that's already, I guess you would say, issue number one, but the words don't have to be perfectly aligned with one another. The Gemara says it a number of times, that when making a Gzeir Shava, as long as you have the basic root of the word, and sometimes, quite frankly, you don't even need the root of the word, you just simply need a word with the same meaning, but the words don't have to be perfect, but the Gemara over here is in expressing the idea that when making Gzeir Shava, if the words are an exact match, it's better. Okay, so the Gemara says Tashma va'bechara liYosef. So the Gemara says, okay, so we have another pasuk in Divrei Hayamim that uses the word bechor in the context of the pishnaim of the bechor, and it says the word bechora. And that's good because that's like a perfect match. Now the Gemara says, good, now that we have a perfect match, how do I know? How do I know that Yosef got twice as much of each of the brothers and not twice as much of the entire estate? The Gemara says, Tashma. Well, that's the next pasuk being quoted. Good. That's the next pasuk saying that that Yosef received two times more than each of the brothers. So Rapapa says to Abaye, yeah, we know that Yosef got more, but what does more mean? More can just simply mean he got an additional palm tree. Okay? Shechem Echad. You got one more than your brother. One more what? Could be a palm tree. So the Gemara says, Amalei, Allah Hamakraf, Rai Menashe, Kuru Mishimon Yeyuli. The Gemara says, no, we know that's not true because the Torah actually tells us what he received. He received double shevet. All the other shvatim are one shevet. He received two shvatim. His sons are now going to each have shevet status. So, and that's the last pasuk according in the Brisa. And now we have the entire string of psukim in the Brisa all explain. First pasuk is used, but it could be for a halacha of Rav Yochanan ben Bracha. Second pasuk is used, but second pasuk does not have a perfect match for the Gzeirah Shavah. Third pasuk has a perfect match, but how do we know that Yosef received a double portion? Then we learn that Yosef received a double portion, but how do we know it was two times more than each of the brothers? And finally, the last pasuk of his two sons have shevet status. Ad kan. Vayminei Reb Chaba mei Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani. Okay. So, we're going to leave for just a moment the world of Pishtaim of the Bechor, and we move on to a little bit of Agarata. A little bit of Agarata, by the way, in this case means most of the remainder of today's daf. Okay, so, and it's Agarata that we're all familiar with. So for the next couple of minutes, we get to listen again to Agarata that we probably all know. I assume. By meaning Rabbi Chaba, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Mar Yaakov, Shanat Bechor, Meruven, not only Yosef. So, what exactly saw fit that Yaakov took away the Bechor from Reuven and moved it over to Yosef? Mar Rav, the Gemara says, what kind of question is that? What do you mean? What did he see? Uvechilo Yitzu Aviv Tziv. Well, either you could figure it out just by reading the Pesukim in Sefer Bereishis, or you could the Pasuk in Divrei Yamim we just quoted. The Pasuk in Divrei Yamim gives exact attribution to why it is that Yaakov took away the Bechor from Reuven and gave it to and gave it to Yosef. What Reuven did with the beds. Now, what Reuven did with the beds, just parenthetically, right? I've been ambiguous about it. The Gemara and Shabbos on Daf Nun Hey. I'm pretty sure it's Nun Hey. The Gemara and Shabbos and Daf Nun Hey has a debate exactly what happened over there. Now, the Pasuk gives the indication that he slept with his stepmother. The Gemara and Shabbos says, don't say that. At least according to one opinion. The Gemara and Shabbos says, don't say that. He just simply moved the beds around. Either way, it's inappropriate. Meaning, it's either highly inappropriate or even subtly inappropriate. In other words, what he did was inappropriate, and for that reason, so he showed a certain amount of undisciplined behavior, and so the bechor was taken away from him. So the Gemara says, okay. So what was the question? Why was the bechor taken away from him? We know why. So the Gemara says, Elamar Rashi not LeYosef. The Gemara says, oh, okay, fine. No, you misunderstood me. I wasn't asking why it was taken away from him. I was talking about now who is the recipient. Who is receiving now the Bechor? Yosef. Gemara says, that seemingly is strange. Meaning, like I explained earlier, should go to, let's drop down, Shimon. Okay, but you don't want to give it to Shimon. Fine, Levi. Fine, you don't want to give it to Levi. Yehuda. And by the way, clearly, the question's really good, because Yehuda really is deserving. Meaning, you want to tell me that Shimon and Levi are also disqualified because of their behavior? Fine. So, but Yehuda, meaning, so why doesn't Yehuda get it?
But Yosef himself was a Bechor.
Ah, okay, good. So, Em Sholachamash Lamad Avadama. So the Gemara says, I'm going to explain it to you in this way. Okay, so the Labalabai Shigido Yosef Besoch Beso. So you have a Balabas who raises a Yosef in his house. Le Yamim Shir Oso Yosef. The Amar. Ahanehu Labalabais Menechsai. And so now, years later, Yosef now is grown up, and he's done fantastic. Business-wise, a total success story. And now, with the Yosef, with all this money in hand, so what is he going to do? Well, what should he do? He should turn around, and he should say to the person who raised him, look, you weren't my father, but you brought me into your house, and you supported me, and you raised me, and so this is what I'm going to have to pay back for you, for all the good that you've done for me. So the Gemara says, now in this mashal, so imagine now who's who in the mashal. So now, Yaakov is the Yosef. I know it sounds strange, but just hear me out. This is what the Gemara is saying. Yaakov is the Yosef, and Yosef is the Baal HaBayis. Sure. No, the Gemara doesn't spell it out. We're going to have to spell it out ourselves. Right? Yaakov is the Yosef, and Yosef is the Baal HaBayis. Consider that There was a big famine taking place in Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov and his sons were running out of food. So what does Yaakov say? So let's go down to Mitzrayim. They go down to Mitzrayim. They get food. They get food a second time, and we all know how this concludes. Now what Yosef does is he reveals himself, the big reveal. Hey, I'm Yosef, and come down to Mitzrayim, and I'll support you, and I'll support the family, and I'll support everybody. So in other words, in the Mashal, Yaakov now, together with the rest of the family, are considered the Yisomim. They're in need. Who's providing? Yosef is providing. And so now, on Yaakov's deathbed, so he has now an opportunity to pay back. So the Gemara says, that's why Yaakov took it away from Reuven to give it to Yosef. Amar Leith, so on that, the Gemara says, the answer is really an incomplete answer. Meaning your question was, took the Bechor away from Reuven and gave it to Yosef. It's incomplete. Even though you're right, it's still an incomplete answer. Gemara says, let me get this straight. You mean to tell me that had it not been for Chet Reuven, you wouldn't mean to tell me that Yaakov would have just simply ignored all the good that Yosef did? Even the two issues should be two separate issues. The fact that Yaakov feels a debt of gratitude and literally a debt to Yosef should be totally separated from Reuven, Bechor, he shouldn't get it anymore. They are two separate issues. Why are they conflated? So Gemara says, Ella, Rav Yonasan Rabcha, Lo Kach Amar. So the Gemara says another answer. And that is the answer provided by Rav Yonasan. Ruya Isa Bechor, let's say it's me, Rachel, Dichsiv. And Ben alluded to this already. That really the truth of the matter is that of the mothers, who should have bore the Bechor? So it really should have been Rachel. Dichsiv, Ela told us Yaakov, Yosef. So really, the generations of Yaakov go down to Yosef. Ela, Shekid Masa, Leah, Berachamim. And what happened was, is that, in other words, the original plan was to have Yaakov marrying Rachel, Rachel's firstborn being the firstborn, meaning the Bechor, and then, because of Tefillah of Rachamim, so all that changed. And Leah becomes now the Bechor, or I should say the first wife, giving birth to the Bechor, but really on some level, at least theoretically, Rachel should have been the mother of the Bechor. And because of the tznius that Rachel had, so Kosh Baruch Hu returned it back to her, meaning the Bechor back to her. My kadmas Leia Berachamim, so let's understand this better. What does that mean that Leia received, got put in front of Rachel as a result of Rachman Dichsiv, Enei Leia Rakos? So we turn to our introduction of Rachel and Leah in the Torah, and in describing Leah, it says that her eyes were Rakos. My Rakos, what does that mean? Ilema Rakos Mamash. You want to tell me that her eyes were soft, worn out, right? Not attractive to look at. So the Gemara says, do you really think the Chumash is going to be describing and discussing Leah in those terms? Efshar bignus behema tamei lo dibra kasuf dechsim in a behema Torah min a behema shirin in a Torah. Look, when describing animals that are kosher or non-kosher, the Torah does not use the word tamei, meaning it's just not appropriate. It's not an appropriate way to talk. If you can communicate something using appropriate language, you absolutely should be using appropriate language at all times. You should not be using inappropriate language. You shouldn't be using negative language. So the Gemara says, if that's true, when it comes to discussion of animals, do you think that when the Torah is talking about the matriarchs, the Torah is going to say, oh, Leah, oh, her eyes, oh my gosh, they're right, disaster. Look at those. The Torah would never speak in those terms. So that's not what Rakos means. Allah, so Einen B'Tara B'Gnus Sadikim Dibra Akasav, Allah Amarev Elazar, Shemas Noseh Arukos. So the Gemara gives a couple of pshat. One pshat the Gemara gives is the pshat in Rev Elazar, and that Mas Noseh Arukos. You know what Leah is? Rakos? Rakos from the word Aroch, which means long. And what is long? Her gifts are going to be long. What does that mean, her gifts are going to be long? The Rashbam over here explains, I'm reading the Rashbam inside, Gedolos Bekuhun of Levia, the Levia Tzamimena, Shemimena Koran of Levim, Umachos Mehuda. Consider what Leah gave birth to. She gave birth to Sheva Levi, meaning Levi, who then turns into Sheva Levi, which means that all the gifts are going to be continuously coming in. She also gave birth to Yehuda, with the Malchus is coming in. So in other words, she gave birth to children who are going to be constant gift receivers, which I understand in other contexts, the Gemara is not so much in favor of, but here, The Leah is Rakos Aruchos. That's one pshat the Gemara gives. Rav Amar Lo Olam Rakos Mamash. Rav says, no, let's go back to the simple pshat. And that the Torah is actually giving a physical description of her eyes, and her eyes are just simply not that attractive to look at. But the Gemara says, V'lo Ganai Hula, Ela Shevach Hula. But the Gemara says, the Torah did not mean it in a pejorative way, in a negative way. The Torah meant it as a Shevach. How so? Sha'isa Shemasa Parshas Adrachim. Because when Leah went through the crossroads and she overheard the women sitting there and speaking. So, b'nei adam shayu omrim, shnei banim yesh la l'rivka, shnei banim yesh la l'avan. So, you know, right, we're all guilty of this. In other words, we're making shiduchim all the time. Right? He has a son, he has a daughter, and by the way, that's a good thing. That's a positive thing. So, okay, fine, so making shiduchim. So the people there at the Parshas Derachim at the crossroads were making shiduchim, and look, it's good. Yaakov's got, I'm sorry, Yitzchak's got a pair of sons, and Lavan has got a pair of daughters, and they're mishpacha, so that's great. Okay, so Gedola, and in terms of making the shiduchim, well, it's only appropriate that the older son marry the older daughter, and the younger son marry the younger daughter. All that's only appropriate. So again, so we all know the players at hand. So we're talking about Esav and Yaakov. We're talking about Leah and Rachel. So the shiduch should work out that Esav should be marrying Leah and Yaakov should be marrying Rachel. All that's well and good. Now, as she's sitting there and she's hearing about now basically not just shiduchim in general, but specifically about her shiduch, so now, curiosity, it's natural, it's normal. So she says, okay, good. So now that I heard who my shiduch is, can I hear a little bit more information? You want to give me like a little sketch, right? A resume, a CV, like what is the guy going to be? So God Mama Asav Ish Rahu. So the answer that they gave her is that he's a terrible person, malas embryos, and he steals from people. He's a thief. And okay, fine, not the greatest sounding resume. What's the younger brother like? Ishtam Yoshev Oalim. Oh, him? He's Ishtam, simple over here, not in a pejorative sense. But in other words, a very simple person, a very straightforward person, sits in the tent, learning Torah. V'haisa bocha. So now she would cry. And this is a shevach, meaning, and crying in this context doesn't just simply mean crying for no purpose, but over here, bocha, in the context of davening. Meaning, and this is the rachamim, the davening that she was involved in. She begged HaKadosh Baruch Hu that she does not get Esav, but rather she gets Yaakov. V'hainu dichsiv. And now the Gemara goes on to explain that helps us understand another point in the Torah, which is Vayarshim Kisnu Aleah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that Leah was hated. Maisnua, what does that mean? That Leah was hated. Again, Ilemasnua Mamashav Shabignus Mehematamelo Dibra Akasav Bignut Sadikim Dibra Akasav. Does the Torah speak in such base ways about our patriarchs and matriarchs? Oh, you know, Yaakov, oh, he hated Leah. The Torah wouldn't say that. The Torah wouldn't say a non-kosher animal using the words behemoth tameya. You think that the Torah is going to actually describe the kind of relationship that Yaakov had with Leah using the words hatred? The Torah wouldn't do that. So what the snu over here means is not that Yaakov hated Leah, but rather what Leah hated was the actions of her potential suitor. And so she begged the Kadosh Baruch Hu, meaning I can't be with that Rasha. Please put me together with the Tzaddik. So that's the Gemara's understanding of the word snua in this context. Vayiftach es Rachman. As a result of that, so Leah was given a bracha. She had a child. Not just one. She had four in a row. Okay. Now, remember, the first point that we made is that really Rachel should have married Yaakov first. In other words, that was the original plan. And then what happened is Rachamim, Tefillah, because Tefillah could do that. Tefillah could change things. So now Leah davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so she married Yaakov first, and she delivered the Bechor. Now, remember, we said earlier also that because of the tznius of Rachel, so therefore it was brought back to Rachel. The Bechor was brought back to Rachel. Even though genealogically she didn't have the firstborn, but theoretically she was supposed to be the firstborn, and she had tznius Yisera, she had this extra tznius, so therefore it was brought back, and that's why Yosef was given the Pishnayim Bechor. Okay, now we're going to say over what was the tznius of Rachel, and again, we're all familiar. Here's the Gemara. So today's daf. Umay tznius haisa b'Rachel d'chsev ayage Yaakov l'Rachel ki achi aviyahu. Yaakov was told ki achi aviyahu that it is the brother of your father. V'chi ben Rivka hu v'alo ben achos aviyahu. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? It's Achos Aviyah, it's the brother of the sister, not right. Okay, sorry. Achos Aviyahu, Ella Amala Minsavasli. So the Gemara here gives us now the behind the scenes dialogue that takes place between Yaakov and Rachel. So Yaakov proposes to Rachel. Yaakov says, let's get married. Amrle in. So she says, it's a great idea. Good, I'm on board. Miu Abba Ramahu, Velo Yechautle. I'll tell you the problem. The problem is my father. In other words, my father's going to get in the way of our marriage. Because he's a Ramai, he's a trickster, and he's just going to not, he's going to prevent the marriage. I can't tell you how it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. He's my father's that kind of guy. So Amarla, my Ram Usa. So he says, you tell me what's going to happen. Amarla, Isle Achta de Kashisha Minai. She says, I have a sister that's older than me. Velo Minsa Velimi Kama. And he will not allow me to get married in front of her. So in other words, I don't know how, but somehow my father is going to be able to get Leah to stand next to you under the chuppah. And I know you think you're smart, and I know you think like that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, but my father's capable of such things, and it's going to happen, says Rachel to Yaakov. So, Amala, Achiv Ani Beramaos. That's the Achiv that's mentioned in the Pasuk. He says, you know what? Brother, I can also be a trickster as well. Amala, Mishar Lula Tzadik Lissumi Beramusa. So, Rachel says, well, look, I looked over your resume, I saw the CV, it mentions on it that you're a tzaddik. That's what the resume says. So, if you're a tzaddik, like the resume says, so you cannot behave in such a manner, meaning I know you don't like to get tricked, but you can't actively trick somebody else. So his response is in. He says, no, of course I can. I'm allowed to. Im navarti tabar v'imi kish titapel. So he quotes the pasuk from Shmuel Beis. I understand. The pasuk wasn't written yet. I get it. But the idea is there, and the idea is that, look, you are not allowed to actively trick somebody, but, in other words, if that's how someone is going to behave towards you, so as a reciprocity, so you can turn around and behave in a manner in which he's going to behave towards you. Right? It's like playoff basketball. In other words, you know, if they're going to get, you know, it's just a rougher game. So over here, okay, fine. So in other words, if they're going to be rough with you, so you have the right to be rough with them as well. That's it's even a tzaddik is allowed to do. So, okay. So now Yaakov thinks that he is going to be able to outwit Lavan. So Masal Asimanim. So what he does is he hands over some sort of telltale signs over to Rachel, so that he knows that when he's with the when he's under the chuppah and subsequently that evening, he'll know that this is Rachel and it's not Leah. So he gave telltale signs over to Rachel, so that these simanim now will be passed over from one to the other, so that he knows that it's Rachel, not Leah. Ki kama aile lele Leah savra hashta michsefai achtai. So now, when it comes time now for the chuppah, so Rachel thinks to herself that I know what my father's going to do. He's going to put Leah over there, and Leah does not know the simanim, and she's going to get embarrassed. And Rachel was concerned for the embarrassment of her sister. Masar sino nihala. And she hands over the simanim to her sister. And now morning comes, and Yaakov now makes the discovery that he is not smarter than his father-in-law, and he's not more. He cannot outwit his father-in-law, and his father-in-law outwitted him.
Does Leah realize she's deceiving Jacob at that moment?
I heard recently. That when Rachel gave over the simanim to Leah, she did not. She only gave over the simanim. But in other words, but in no way did she indicate that she was supposed to be the. She was supposed to be the bride. I heard that recently. I'd love to give you a source. I don't have a source for that, but I heard that, and it's what it makes the story even more, you know, not challenging, inspirational, emotional, whatever. In other words, it makes Rachel even more heroic. So vehi baboker vehi nehi leah mechlad ad hashalav leahi. Ela mitoch simanim shemasal Yaakov v'rachel masarta leah lo havi yadala ad aishaita. And exactly, meaning that there was simanim that was passed from Yaakov to Rachel, Rachel then passed them to Leah, Leah then showed them to Yaakov, and that's how they went through the whole night, and he didn't know. Wow, it was such a powerful medrash. It's Bracious Rabbah. I saw it in the Masifta last night. It's really, really powerful. So the Medrash says that I'm paraphrasing over here. I don't have it in front of me. The Medrash says that that Yaakov says to Leah, like, how could you do that? Meaning that was terrible. Meaning what you did was super deceitful. So Leah says back to Yaakov, well, let's go back to what you did. Remember back when you were back in your parents' home, and your mother told you to mimic, right? To mimic your brother and to pretend like you're your brother. And why did you do it? Because of kibud av v'aim, meaning you did it because your mother instructed you to do so. Okay, and the justification was, well, A, my mother told me to do so, and B, because I'm going to get the bracha. So as a result of that, so what you did is you mimicked your brother. So Leah says to Yaakov, same thing with me. Meaning, I was instructed to do so. Okay, instructed by my sister, but in other words, but I was instructed to do so. And you can even go a step further. Right? In other words, the father told her to do so. So in other words, keep it avayim, I was instructed to do so. And I my father told me to do so. And all I did was imitate my sister, much like you imitated your brother. And again, the justification is, you did so in order to get the brachas. I did so that I'd end up marrying a tzaddik and that I would have sons through you. So the Medrash over here says, you know, it's magialo, meaning Yaakov was on one hand shocked, but on the other hand, it was revelatory on his own behavior that he did earlier in his life.
Conversation actually happened between him and Lava, not between him and Lava.
Okay, the Medrash
created a very contentious relationship.
That's understandable. Okay, we're towards the bottom of the Amud on Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, towards the bottom of the Amud, three lines from the bottom. Ba'mine Abba Khalifa, Kuriya Mi Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Bechlalan Ata Motse Shivim, Bepratam Ata Motse Shivim Chasar Echad. A problem that we're all familiar with, it's the numbers. When going down to Mitzrayim, so who was counted? So the Torah says, well, the 70 people went down from Eretz Yisrael down to Mitzrayim, Yaakov and his children. And then the Torah actually counts and enumerates all of them. But when going through the count, you will find that the number is not 70, but rather the number is 69. So, it's right.
Chapter 46, verse 8.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. In the Stone Chumash, he does a great job. He has a chart on page 261. So, and it actually, he sits there and he counts all 70. So again, it's not 70. Leah's responsible for 33, Zilpah 16, Bilhah 7, Rachel 14. You put all those numbers together and you end up with 69. And that is obviously one short of 70. And so our Gemara in today's daf is raising the simple question, and that is, can we have good accounting? can we have good accounting? Is that possible? So atamosishim prapatam atamosishim chazer achad amarle to umahisa im dina. So the Gemara starts off with a suggestion, and that is, well, Dina was born with a twin. Dechsiv the es Dina bito. Dina together with her, I'm sorry, the es Dina bito, and you know the word es is always a ribui. It comes to include Dina had a twin sister. Ela me'ata tuma haisa im Binyamin. Dechsev, the Gemara says, okay, Binyamin also had a twin sister. Ves Binyamin echav ben imo. You have the word ve'es over there in relation to Binyamin. That's a ribui as well. So Amar Magolias tova haisa biyadi v'ata mevakish la'avda mimeni. So he says back in response, look, I have such a beautiful pearl. Meaning I have pshat. And I cannot believe that you are going to give these kind of pshat to me, and you're really taking away my thunder. Meaning I have such a beautiful pshat. And my pshat goes like this. It's a reference to Yocheved, who shahorasa b'derech v'leidasa b'nechamos, that she was conceived on the way down, and she was born b'nechamos, meaning as they were entering, and they were going from country to country, from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim. So Beinu Chomos, while between the walls, so she was born. Shenemar Asher Yalda Ata LeLevi B'Mitzrayim. So the Torah, in describing Yocheved, says that she was Leida B'Mitzrayim. Her birth was in Mitzrayim, and the Gemara makes a deal. Leidas b'Mitzrayim, ve'ein horasa b'Mitzrayim. Well, her birth was in Mitzrayim, but her conception was prior to that point in time. Okay, I already told you. I just mentioned it again quickly. Just recently, I said it. The Rishonim are bothered by the question that it was years of famine. And the Gemara in Tanis says that you're not allowed to have children during years of famine. And in fact, Yosef himself, we learn it from Yosef. Yosef stopped having children before the years of famine began. And the Rishonim are bothered by a very simple question. Well, why would Yosef stop having children? Because it was years of famine. And meanwhile, in those very same years, Levi was having a daughter. Okay. So, and as I pointed out, it's a very good question. The Rishonim struggle with an answer. Tosos in the Gemara, Tosos in Tanis says that. Ask me again. I'll show you that it's not a long Tosos. It's a short Tosos over there. It's on Daf Tes. Anyway, Baminei Rabbi Chaba Mei Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Ksiva Yikashi Yaldav Rachos Yosef. So as long as we're here, and as long as we're discussing some of the more basic questions regarding the episode of Rachel, Leah, Rachel, Yosef, etc., etc., so the Gemara over here asks a really simple question. And that is that there seems to have been a significant moment in the life of Yaakov, where Yaakov now turns to his entire family and says, okay, now let's go. Meaning, he lived with his father-in-law, Lavan, for upwards of 20 years. And then, just one day, he picks up and says, okay, now's a good time to go. Let's go. And so, the question's a really simple question. Meaning, what was the breaking point? What exactly motivated Yaakov at this point in time to say, now's a good time? So, huh? So, Maishnaki is Yalid Yosef. So, okay, so from the reader, meaning us, so we know it's Yosef's birth. Right, we know that. The Gemara's question is really just one step even deeper. And what exactly was the significance of Yosef's birth that now he realizes, okay, now it's time to go. Like, what's going on there? So, Amalei Ra Yaakov Avinu Shein Zor Shel Esav Nimsa Ela B'Yad Zor Shel Yosef. Shenema. So, the Gemara says that Yaakov had the following Masorah. And that is that leaving Lavan also means, it also means that he's going to meet up again with his brother Esav. And let's remember, Esav hates him. And Esav wants to kill him. So, at this point in time now, what he needs is, he needs the anti-Esav, right? The kryptonite to defeat Esav. What is the kryptonite to defeat Esav? That's Yosef. Yosef is that. And he has a Masorah. Shenamar, now again, I'm going to say the same thing I said earlier this morning. He's quoting a pasuk from Avadya. And of course, Avadya was written years later. But the point is that the idea, the Masorah, this tradition that he had, obviously was a tradition that was given to him by Yitzchak, by Yaakov. Well, I'm sorry, I was going to say by Avram. Okay. But in other words, it's part of the Masorah that he had. And that is, Vahaya Beis Yaakov Eish, Uveis Yosef Lehava, Uveis Esav Lakash. So the Pasuk in Avadya says that Beis Yaakov was a fire, and Beis Yosef Lehava, he was a flame, and Esav is a kash, he's a straw. So in other words, with the power of Yosef, he was able to combat and defeat Esav. So the Gemara says, that's it. That's what Yaakov saw. So with the birth of Yosef, he says, okay, now we can leave. Because now I'm ready to confront Esav. Esav, yekum David, mehaneshev ad ha'erv l'machra, sam. The Gemara takes us to the end of Sefer Shmuel, Shmuel Aleph. And that is that David is waging war. David is waging war against Amalek. And the problem is, Let's set ourselves up. Amalek is a descendant of Esav. So if you really need now somebody to defeat Amalek, so who do you need? You need B'nai Yosef. Because, well, like we just learned together, the antidote to Amalek is Yosef. So we need somebody from Manasseh, somebody from Ephraim. So even though David's a Melech Yisrael, but he's from Shevet Yehuda. and we need support from Menashe or Ephraim and or Ephraim. So Amalei de'akarch kinevilo karcha ksuve. So the Gemara says in response, look, you know your Navi very well, but you don't know your Ksuvim very well. And so whoever taught you Navi, so good, they got a good education there, but he didn't teach you Ksuvim. Dechsev balachto al tzaklag naflu alav mi menashe ed Navi Yosef v'yidael Michael v'yosef v'alihu v'tzalasi rosh alafim asher l'menashe. So you look at the parallel psukim in Divrei Hayamim, also describing this battle. So you'll see that David was supported by members of the tribe of Menashe, sons of Yosef. So, okay, so now that you see these psukim in Divrei Hayamim, so there's no question. Meaning, Menashe was there supporting David.
What about Yehoshua fighting the Amalek when they came out?
Right, and right, correct. And he was?
And Yosef, right?
Right. Oh, that's good. Oh, right, that's good. Right. It's interesting, though, because the Rambam writes that when you appoint a king, so the king's got three jobs. One of the three jobs of the king is to defeat Amalek. So it's just interesting that, on one hand, our Gemara is telling us very clearly that in order to defeat Amalek, we need Bnei Yosef. On the other hand, the mitzvah is on the Melech, and the Melech is coming from Yehuda. So... But I guess, you could put all that together, meaning that the king has to use the Yosef as the...
Shaul was also Ben Binyan, but he didn't finish his job.
All right, correct. Mesev Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef is bothered by the following question. Again, we're going back now to Divrei Hayamim. Omehem min b'nei Shimon ha'achula har seir, nashim chamesh me'osu paltia, unareh v'rafya v'uziyah b'nei yishib roshan v'yakuh she'eriz ha'pleita, la'amalek v'yashu shamari yamazeh. So what do we have over here in this pasuk? Seemingly Shimon attacking Amalek. And again, our Masora is that we need Bnei Yosef. So Amar Rav Barshila Yishimi Bnei Menashe Asi. So he says, no. Well, again, you look at those pasukim, read them carefully, and you're going to see Yishi. And Yishi, we know, was a descendant of Menashe, Dichsiv. And these pasukim in Divrei Hayamim, Bnei Menashe Chefer V'Yishi. We know that Menashe had six sons. Yeah, we know that because we just saw that a couple of days ago, in the chalukah of Benot Slavchad. Slavchad, who was the daughter of Chefer, who was the daughter of Menashe, and we know that Chefer was one of Chefer's brothers, was Yishi. Remember? So we're seeing it again today as well. Okay, let's pause over here. Tomorrow, I'll do the halacha. In other words, we're up to the halacha again. We're going to go back to Pishnayim. Okay, I'm going to excite all the accountants out there tomorrow. For all you accountants, we're going to be line iteming the difference between what is the current holding versus what's a receivable. You're going to love it. So, okay, for the rest of us, we're just going to try to hold on and understand. Okay, today's daf we went over the Pishnayim. We did the formula of how to understand Pishnayim. Is it two times what each brother is receiving, or is it two times the entire estate? The Gemara sides with the former, not the latter. And then the Gemara launches into a lengthy agadah regarding Yaakov, Rachel, Leah, Yosef. Okay, and it was just such a wonderful daf today in terms of, again, all this we've heard already, heard time and again, but it's all coming from today's daf. This is a source.